Shalom everyone, we are in Parashat Vayera this week, and that is in the book of Bereshit, Genesis, chapter 18, verse 1. Vayera elav Hashem be'elonei mamre, v'yoshev petach ohel kechom hayom. And God is being revealed to Abraham in Elonei Mamre, and he's sitting in front of the tent, and it was very hot day. Okay? So, the parasha has few basic, very important stories. It's not one story, it's a bunch of stories, but they're all connected. One is, God is being revealed to Abraham after Abraham was circumcised at the end of the last parasha. Okay? On the third day, there is that amazing revelation, a revelation of no precedence sin since the sin of Adam, okay? Within that revelation, the three angels appear to Abraham. He does not know they are angels, although he has a great revelation. But there's a reason why he cannot see they are angels. He sees them as people. He runs over. He serves them. And then they bring him a message. He didn't want a message. He wanted just to serve his guests. Okay, now the next story, and they, of course, bring the message of the birth of Isaac. Remember, Abraham is 99 years old. Sarah is 89 years old. She's laughing, very famous story. And in the end of that story, it connects to another story. Why? Because one of the angels was on his way to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. God is telling, in the end of the revelation, okay? Remember, we're in the middle of the revelation. How come the story of the three angels is part of that revelation? We'll explain it, how it's connected to this month. Then, God is telling Abraham about the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, and Abraham is starting to deal. It's a real deal. It's a kind of, he's bargaining with God. If there are 50 righteous people, if that 45, 40 comes to 10, if that 10, God promised him he's not going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. Unfortunately, there was only one tzaddik, Lot, and we just know that Lot means a curse. He was not a tzaddik. Why, in the first place, he chose to live in Sodom and Gomorrah? Okay, and that is the end of the story. Lot is being saved by the angels, two angels. One angel is telling Abraham about the birth of Isaac. Two angels go to Sodom and Gomorrah, and they save Lot. Then the story gets complicated. Why it's complicated? Because Lot is being saved from that horrible disaster of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. His wife dies during that. They cannot save her. She becomes a pillar of salt. So many stories over here, we don't have the time to go to each one of them. However, Lot runs away to a cave with his daughters, and they think that the last three humans left on earth. So they get him drunk, they sleep with him, both get pregnant, and from one comes out the nation of Ammon, and from the other one comes the nation of Moab. Okay, and we know that Ruth, the Moabite, converted, and finally her great son was King David. Okay, very weird story. How come? Okay, and we need to dig. After that story, chapter 21 in Genesis, verse 1, still in Parashat Vayera, Vashem pakad et Sarah, and God visited Sarah, which means in Hebrew, she gave birth. And she gave birth, she got pregnant, and she gave birth to Isaac. Okay, and he's called Isaac Yitzchak. Yitzchak means he will laugh because Sarah laughed. So why not Titzchak? Titzchak is she will laugh. Or Tzachaka, because she laughed in the past. Okay, but the name of Yitzchak is because of the laughing of Sarah. What does that mean? Okay, what's in it for us? By the way, this part, Genesis 21, verse 1 and on, that's a reading on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. The next part, which is also very important, goes in chapter 22. Chapter 21, that's reading of first day of Rosh Hashanah, the birth of Isaac. Chapter 22, that's the binding of Isaac. That's chapter 22. It's being read on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. Okay? And we finish the reading of the Torah on this page. Just one more thing. It's like another little story just before chapter 22, in the end of chapter 21, that's also being read on Rosh Hashanah. It is about the deal between Avimelech, the king of the Plishtim, the Philistines, okay, and Abraham, okay? There's a pact, and the pact is because they see, the Philistines don't like Abraham that much because he's kind of, he's too successful. And you know, when somebody successful comes to your region, either you fight them or either you join them. In the beginning, the Philistines fight him, Abraham, okay? But then they realize, wherever he digs, water come out, and you better join him. So they make a pact with him on the seventh well, and that's called Be'er Sheva, which means the seventh well. And that's a city till today, the capital of the Negev. Okay, so here we have so many stories. What's in it for us? What do you get from these stories? And it's all starting in the beginning of chapter 18, beginning of the parasha. There are few things. There's a revelation God reveals to Abraham. Okay, why shouldn't I want a revelation, God's revelation? And the answer is, be careful. This could be deadly. Why? Why that could be deadly? Everybody wants light. Everybody wants to see, like, God, show me the truth. Isn't that what everybody wants? If there is a God, let him show me the truth. I would like to have a revelation. If God spoke to me, I would change my ways. So I have some news for you. God is speaking to all of us. So I had a big discussion with somebody, I guess on Shabbat yesterday, about the whole thing, that if we understand that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is endless, that's monotheism, and that means he's above time, when did God really speak to Abraham? And the answer is, he spoke to Abraham in the beginning, when the creation has been created, and his speech to Abraham has been already created. So now the question is, when did Abraham reach the place he can hear God's speech? Okay, for that, the Zohar says, he had to have been circumcised. And then the revelation came. Okay, when did God speak to the nation of Israel on Mount Sinai? Oh, we can say that happened some 20, few hundred years ago. When, you know, the Israelites left Egypt, they went 49 days in the desert, and on the 50th day, God started to speak to them. So do you think that God was waiting? No, God is above time. He's endless. If you say that he spoke to them, it means he's not endless. There's God before he spoke and God after he spoke. And the answer is, the revelation of Mount Sinai has been created already in the beginning. The question is, when did the nation of Israel arrive to the place in which they activated the Mount Sinai revelation, and we heard, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am God your Lord. You know what is called, by mistake, the Ten Commandments, or known better in Hebrew, the Ten Sayings, or Ten Utterances. Okay, in Hebrew it doesn't say commandments, if you know that. It says, Dibrot, speakings or utterances. Okay, when was that said? That was said in the beginning. So, which means, all what we can receive from God, from God's point of view, has already been given. The question is, When is it that we are finally going to push the button and allow that message to come in? We need to step up and reach that place that we activate that message. So it's not, you know, some people have complained, God, please show me the way. He showed you the way. Are you ready to receive it? Are you ready to accept it? Abram had to go through 99 years to get the idea that he needs to be circumcised. By the way, it took him 75 years to realize, to get the message and understand the message that he has to go to Canaan and not to Turkey, which is Haran. Okay? So we understand that people have to go through the journey. And if you didn't hear the message, it's not because God did not give it to you. It's because you did not reach that place that you are capable of getting the message. But the message has been given. Same thing about God, give me sustenance. Okay? How many people around, you know, the whole of humanity have that worry? It's like, God, why don't you feed me? The answer is, he feeds you. The question is, do you take it out? Are you able to activate that feeding, that sustenance, which means the whole idea of monotheism is that the giving of the Creator is endless, infinite, and it's not dependent in time. What's dependent in time is our perception. And that's why the Zohar on Parashat Vayera tells us that the Zohar is giving us that verse from Song of Songs. And the verse says, chapter 2, Hanitzanim niru ba'aretz et hazamir igia. The sprouts have been seen. It's a time of the nightingale. Okay, so you think it's speaking about the spring, right? And the Zohar says, no, it's speaking about Abraham. And it says, as we spoke before about the book, the parasha of Bereshit, okay, Genesis. And about that amazing verse that says, before Adam has been created, not even a bush grew up. Since when do we care about bushes? Trees, grass, vegetables, fruits, bushes? Since when do we care about bushes? Nobody speaks about bushes. We didn't speak about the creation, about bushes. We talk about trees, but the word in Hebrew for a bush is siach. Siach means also speech. And the Zohar explains basically a concept that is known today as one of the major concepts of modern physics. If a tree fell in the forest, okay, and there was nobody there, did it make a sound? Our logic says, of course it did. Okay, modern physics says it did not. If there's nobody to measure it, then it didn't happen. Okay, is it logical? No, but it is real. Okay, there, you know, quantum physics comes also with the idea that you can transfer energy or particles from A to B without them taking the journey between A and B, which means, you know that Euclidic assumption, okay, or axiom that says, it's an assumption, that between two points, the shortest way is a straight line. Quantum physics taught us that that's not necessarily right. You can go from A to B without crossing by all the points in between. Sometimes you can go from A to B without having a line between them. And that is the shortest way. Okay, is that logical? No. Is that real? Modern physics says so. So, hear what the Zohar is teaching us, that the whole reality around us is conscious dependent. It depends on the way we perceive reality, which means before there was Adam with the consciousness of a human being, Homo sapiens, there was no reality. What was there? It was like buds, nitzanim. You know, if you look, you go around towards the end of the winter and you go around and the trees are still in the fall. I'm talking about in countries that there are trees that go through fall because it's too cold, okay, in the winter, to have leaves, okay? And then you realize the little tiny, tiny buds that you know they will, as the weather is going to become a little bit warmer, those buds are going to develop into a foliage that you can see it as a tree and not just a skeleton of a tree. Okay, so the Hebrew word for that is nitzanim. What does it mean, nitzanim? Those are the buds. It's a potential leaf or a flower, which means the whole creation was in a state of buds till Adam was created. When Adam was created, everything started to bloom. What does that mean? It needs a human consciousness for reality to bloom. Till that moment, everything was there, but there was no consciousness. And the moment there's no human consciousness means that you can see it in a greater picture. You can imagine. You can tell a story. That's the difference between a human and an animal. Okay? You see a context, and the context is always subjective. It's always about what's in it for me, because the moment you're human, you are biased. It's always, how do you see stuff? What's in it for me? If there's nothing in it for you, you won't see it. If you see it, you ignore it. It's a white noise for you. So, the moment Adam was created, and Adam was created and he realized his purpose, le'ovda u'le'shomra in Genesis, to till the ground, which means he had a job. What was his job? His job was to turn the bread of shame, which means the tree of life, which is the whole structure of all the sefirot. Well, what are the sefirot? They're basically fruits. What does it mean, fruits? It's every sefira is an illumination. That's the meaning of the word sefira. You see it in English. The word sefira migrated to English with the word sapphire. Sapphire is a Hebrew, pure Hebrew word, sapir, which means a shining stone. Okay? Sefira, sapphire, okay? Which means every sefira is an illumination. Now, there are many illuminations. Why? Because after the tzimtzum, after the vessel shut down its desire to receive, the universe that we know has been created, the universe in which there is time, there is a set of steps. Okay, things go by evolution. Hishtalshelut. Okay? Evolution was not invented by Darwin. It is an ancient Hebrew word, hishtalshelut. It's coming from the word shalshelet, chain. Because hishtalshelut means to evolve. One loop in the chain evolves from another one. Okay? A process. So the process allowed humanity, in this case Adam, to make a correction of the bread of shame, because after the tzimtzum, the moment we receive the light, we have bread of shame, the shame of receiving, okay, a free gift, by just receiving it. So Adam had a job to connect to the sefirot step by step, level by level, through the whole tree of life, from the bottom to the top, in order to receive it, in order to share. Who is there to share? The Creator. How can I share with the Creator? That's the highest level of sharing. When I receive just because the Creator wants me to receive. Just because I love the Creator, I know that my job, He created me to receive His light, His greatness, His fulfillment, His revelation. When reaching that place allows me to receive the light because I was created for that purpose. Okay? So by this, it's like I'm giving pleasure to the Creator by receiving what He prepared for me. Okay? That was the status of Adam in the Garden of Eden. However, when Adam is reaching a certain level that is called Yesod de Abba, it's the level of Yesod in Olam Atzilut. Over there, we ate from the tree of knowledge. And because, and what was the sin over there? The first bite, it says, was not a sin. It was done really with a pure consciousness. I'm here to receive God's bliss and God's gifts. However, that was too much. The tree of knowledge was a bite that was too big for us, humanity, to digest. The result was immediately, v'chi ta'ava ulayinayim. The word ta'ava, lust, L-U-S-T, which means desire to receive for the self alone, has been released to the universe. And by that moment, everything has been shut down by itself. And that created what we call the fall of Adam. The moment the desire to receive for the self alone has been created, ta'ava, everything was shut down and the universe fell into little pieces. Did the universe fall into little pieces? No. Our consciousness fell into little pieces. And then the tikkun started all over again. Adam had to become a physical being. He needed to bring physical children who were mortals. And Adam and Eve became mortals. Then humanity became mortal. What does it mean to be mortal? That you die. When do you die? Every time that you touch the desire to receive for the self alone. Every time we touch fear, pain, it's all under one name, the desire to receive for the self alone. That is our demise. It doesn't kill us at once. It kills us little by little. It creates despair, pain, it shuts our hope down, it shuts our love down, it shuts our energy down, it generates physical diseases, mental diseases. That's what hurt us the most, because that is what we have to correct. Without it, there's no work, okay? So we are here not to be just the light, we're here to correct all what fell down and crushed down by the sin of Adam. And which means we have to deal with the darkness. We have to deal with the desire to receive for the self alone. We have to deal with the darkness and whatever you call the dark side, because the dark side is a result of the crush of the light side. Who crushed our consciousness? And therefore, as we are born with a body, and the body comes with the evil inclination. And our job is not just to be, creatures of light. Not now. Our job is to collect the pieces of darkness that are basically what? They are light that turn into darkness, and that's why it's called in the Kabbalistic lingo, klipot. Klipa is a shell. What is a shell? Or a peel, in Hebrew it's the same word, klipa. Shells, they are, let's say, nuts. They have shells. Oranges, they have peels. In Hebrew it's the same thing. Anything that does not allow you to access the juicy or the tasty or the nutritious feeling inside, that's called klipa. Okay? And that applies also to our everyday life. We have all kinds of situations in which we react in a very painful way, like anger or like lust or anything or any kind of addiction to hatred, to victimization, whatever. These are called klipot, klipot. But remember, when you look at a walnut, what do you see? First, you see the klipa. Only after you crush the shell, then you can see the good inside. When you see an orange, you see first the klipa. The juicy, tasty stuff inside, you see after you peel it. Same thing. We have in our lives all the time moments, occasions, incidents in which we see pain, a reaction. And it's not an objective thing. It is our own tikkun. What does it mean? 10 people experience the same thing at the same time. Few of them react violently. Some react, they shut down. And some say, well, what a beautiful day. It's amazing, whatever. Like, are you blind or something? The answer is, there's nothing that is subjective. Nothing that is non-biased. We're humans. The moment we experience a situation, when we react to it, the reaction is basically facing the klipa that we have to correct. How do you correct it? You transform the negative, the klipa, the shell, the peel. You overcome the negative aspect. You teach yourself to react in a blissful, positive way without lust. You know, being angry is also a lust. People have passion to be angry, to be a victim. All of those negative emotions. When you transform that negative emotion, you corrected that klipa. Now, if you see an apple, an orange, you see the klipa, but without the inner feeling, it will crush. It cannot sustain without the inner feeling. Every situation that we go through, all of them, even the worst of them all, what we experience, if we experience a disastrous moment, if we experience a negative moment, a painful moment, okay, what do we experience? We experience the klipa, the outer shell. Who is responsible for that klipa? We are. Either we generated it a while ago, that could be years ago, could be past life, or we experience by being part of Adam. We all have been part of Adam. Or we experience it as part of Adam, and the moment we experience it, instead of being experienced as a desire to receive for the sake of sharing, we experience it as a desire to receive for the self alone, the result is high and bye. And after the bye, there's a flash and a crash. And the crash leaves a residue. The residue is the klipa. The disappointment. Let's say there was somebody had an experience meeting somebody could be their soulmate. However, suspicion, selfishness, blindness, immaturity, whatever turned the meeting that could be an amazing meeting full of love and full of beauty, and so many fruits could come out of it, but our negative attitude turn it into a big disappointment. That big disappointment is a klipa. It makes us afraid, victims, whatever, any kinds of negative residue that we have to clear before we can experience a real true love all over again. Okay, that's called a tikkun, a correction. Okay? So, the journey, last is already 50, so many years, 57, 82 years already, that this journey is taking. After the sin of Adam, humanity was learning how to do what we just spoke about. How to take, and that's our daily job, how to take situations, and with love, with positive passion, we transform the negativity that it's all coming from desire to receive for the self alone into a desire to receive for the sake of sharing. What we call also the central column. I activate unconditional love, chesed, loving kindness. And I activate also, I allow the left column to be activated also. And that's called the left column. That means what's in it for me. But I bind them together for the central column. And by doing that, I'm able to have enough energy to lift myself over and turn the situation into a positive situation. What if I didn't do it? I'll have to deal with it again and again till I do it right. Not this lifetime, another lifetime, till I do it right. So the Zohar says, so whatever we experience is a result of our consciousness. We can have the most amazing opportunity for a job. But if we are not mature enough, if we are selfish, we can turn this job opportunity into a huge disaster. Because instead of giving service, we are busy just with our selfishness and we can mess it up. We all know because we're very good at it, because we're humans. And we're not here to be perfect. We're not here to be creatures of light. We are here to take those moments and to turn the darkness into light, the bitterness into sweet. That's our job. Abraham goes through a journey. When he's 99 years old, he realizes, he comes to a next level in which he needs to go through a circumcision. That's another aspect of transforming the physical body from a negative aspect to a positive aspect. I won't go into it too much because it's another class. But when he does it, says the Zohar, he is revealing another way to see reality. That way of seeing reality was waiting since the sin of Adam till that moment to be revealed. And that means, Vayera Elav Hashem, then God, Yud Kei Vav Kei, is being revealed to Abraham. Okay? That is the first time that a human being since the sin of Adam has allowed himself to realize reality in a way that only Adam experienced. Okay? We're talking about a great tikkun. However, that light that is being revealed was so awesome, was so powerful, and Abraham was not yet corrected completely. Okay? He did not yet. He was basically the chariot of the right column. Chesed, loving kindness. So then it says, the commentators are saying, that Abraham was stressed out. I'm having this amazing revelation. Okay? I can burn up. You see, a lot of people, they're looking for excitement. Okay? So they can have excitement by climbing a mountain, skiing. There's so many ways. You call it extreme sport. You can call it like going to Vegas and gamble. You can having a night out with a lot of alcohol or all kinds of other stuff that gets you very excited. What's the problem? You connect to so much energy, and you get excited. It's hot. You get very hot. This is so hot. What's happening over here? And some people call it cool, right? But it's really exciting. Excitement is heat, right? What's the problem? If you're so focused on how much you enjoy it, that means that you are activating your left column. because you are, and some people do it the next level, they go through a spiritual process. They study the Zohar, they do a meditation, they have a kind of a retreat in which they really take off and wow! But it's all about enjoying oneself. And Abraham is teaching us the next step. In the middle of his it's hot, terribly hot. He's like so excited. There's a revelation of God like never seen since the sin of Adam. He reached a stage no one, no human being arrived to before the sin. And he's realizing with his wisdom, if I'm continuing to enjoy so much, that amount of energy that I'm enjoying right now, I'm going to be burnt. I'm going to be crushed. I must chill it down. How do you chill energy? So every power station around the world, okay, needs water. Why? To cool down. If it doesn't cool down, it can create a meltdown. So Abraham, the commentator is saying, Abraham started to be stressed out that there are no guests. You kidding? You're having that revelation. No, Abraham is aware if I'm not going to do something for someone, which is chesed, which is the element of water. Well, if I'm not going to achieve and awaken the element of water, that energy that I'm experiencing right now is going to burn me down. He's stressed out. So God is sending him an opportunity, the three angels. Abraham cannot, should not see them as angels. He should see them as humans. Why? Humans need to eat. So if we read what's happening, he runs towards them. He serves them like his life is dependent on it. And you know what? His life is dependent on it. So what's the message? Whenever you feel that you are being fried, that you're burning, that it's too much, that you are having so much, and it's eerie because there's so much you're getting, you know what? It's even over the edge. It's starting to burn you down. You get too angry, upset, stressed out. You want to cool it down? Give. Just get out of your comfort zone and give. Find somebody to help to. Go out of your comfort zone and help. Abraham is 99 years old. It's a very hot day. He had the circumcision 3 days ago. It's very painful. Can you imagine him running with the bandages? Wow. And he does it like his life is dependent on it. To teach us, when you feel that you get so much and you have so much and it's so amazing and you're flying, uh-oh, how can I do something for somebody else? Why? Because if you don't, you'll get burned. Look at all these people. They're idols of our planet today, our modern Western civilization. Michael Jackson, Elvis Presley, Marilyn Monroe, all of these people, so many names. You know, I lived in Beverly Hills, I met so many of these people, and you look at them and say, how can you be so creative in destroying your lives? You had such an amazing life, and how could you be so creative? Because if it's all about me, if it's all about getting and getting and getting to the peak of excitement, you get burnt. Unless you see it as a life goal to be there for others, and you really go the distance, like Abraham, against the pain, against the discomfort, but I'm enjoying myself. You want the joy to continue? Do something for someone else. You know, sometimes you don't have to go just to thousands of miles away. Sometimes the person that needs your sharing, the poor person needs your sharing, could be your child, your parent, your spouse, a neighbor, next door neighbor. It's the distance means getting out of your comfort zone, getting out of your own box. That's how you get out of the box. That's how you can save your own life. Why? Parashat Vayera, as we spoke about in the previous parashot, we are now in the midst of the month of Cheshvan. And the month of Cheshvan, Scorpio, it's all about intensity. The universe is very intense. The universe is checking us out. The universe is, it's a stress test. Why? Like, did you really do the job during the high holidays, Rosh Hashanah Til Simchat Torah? And if you did not, here it is. We give you the next challenge. We'll see that happening again. So you go the distance. You have to go the distance, and you need to go through the stress test. Okay? So what does that mean? So we already spoke about that, and we have the exact opposite. So much light, so much energy coming to the world. Okay, Abraham gets this amazing revelation, but he knows how to turn it around by doing something good for somebody else, totally in a selfless way. That's the only way you can transform the pain, the stress, the negativity of the overwhelming situation into a correction. What happens at the end? Then God says, okay, I'm reading right now, Genesis chapter 18, verse 17. And God said, "V'Hashem amar, ha'mechase ani me'Avraham asher ani oseh." I'm not going to cover from Abraham what I'm going to do. Okay, I'm going to tell him what's going to happen. And then he shares, God is sharing with Abraham about that he's going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. Why does Abraham have to hear it? Abraham has to hear it because he's right now in a level that he brought himself to, that he can hear what's going around. Because the moment you become that person that cares for humanity, you start to get the messages concerning humanity, if you really care. And that's the place and the position Abraham put himself in. And then Abraham has that chutzpah, that nerve, that audacity to argue with God. First time in history. Noah did not dare to do that. Abraham is doing that. Oh God, you cannot just, you know, destroy a whole bunch of cities, a whole metropolitan area. Blooming metropolitan area full of children and babies and adults. And God says, okay, give me, you know, make my day. Give me a reason why not to. And there's a whole debate over here. There's a whole deal. Okay, but what's that for us? Sodom and Gomorrah, they symbolize that other part of humanity, that when Abraham gets a stress, he knows what to do. He turns it around from negative to positive. Okay? Sodom and Gomorrah, they forbid charity. They forbid helping somebody in distress. Which means, if this is the place you put yourself in, you'll be burned to the ground. Okay? Either in a disaster of that scale, or the Zohar says, or either a plague will come and slow you down and take the toll, because you're living a lifestyle that it's all about left column, which means lust and light, selfish. Everything is about how can I enjoy the universe without doing anything for anyone else. It's illegal in this system of this universe. That's a message of this parasha, to give us protection against all the stress that is supposed to be our share during this time. Okay, but how this story with Lot continues, because why Lot is being saved from Sodom and Gomorrah? As we learned, in Aramaic, Lot is a curse. Lot is a dark side in each one of us. And what happens? Lot is being saved. He's not being demised. He's not being destroyed. Why? And the Zohar is explaining, because in every dark stuff, dark person, dark situation, what did we say? It looks like a curse because of the klipa, because of the shell. But what's inside the shell? That's a light that got covered. Okay? The klipa has no life of its own. It's alive only thanks to the light within, and the klipa lives on that light. The moment you correct it, it's like you pull that light out, the klipa will become into nothing, because it's not a being on its own. You know, a lot of people that think themselves as monotheistics, they could be Jews, could be Muslims, could be Christians, could be other religions declaring themselves as monotheistic. But some of them give so much power to Satan, to the dark side, to demons, like they are forces of their own. They're not. Lot is not a force of its own. Lot has inside, under the klipah, the light of God. And our job is to transform it. So what happens? A weird thing is happening. Lot is being saved. Why? There's still light inside him. And he gets his two daughters pregnant. They get him drunk. He gets them pregnant. But what happens with them? So it says, the elder sleeps with him. And then it says that her father did not realize that he slept with her. He didn't know that. He was too drunk. And then it's that we're reading chapter 19 in Genesis, verse 33. And the word is, ולא ידע בשכבה קומה. And he, the father, did not know when she lay down with him and when she got up. But on the word Bekuma, above the letter Vav of Bekuma, got up, there is a dot in the Torah. There are no vowels in the Torah. But there are 10 times there are dots above the letters. It's not vowels, it's dots. It means there's something in addition that we cannot see. Okay, what does it mean Beshochvav Kuma? What is this dot over there? And the Zohar is teaching, Baal HaTurim, one of the great commentators on the Torah, says, there's a dot over the Vav. To say, and he's giving kind of an explanation, but he's saying it's like when Boaz slept with Ruth. Who was Ruth? She was a Moabite. She was a Moabite princess. She was a result of that, what we're talking about, which means, just saying, what came out of Boaz and Ruth? King David. What is King David? That's a symbol of the chariot of Malchut, the ability of redeeming the physical world, turning every physicality into spirituality without destroying the physicality. You know, as many religions, you have to destroy the body, richness, whatever, in order to become spiritual. Not according to Judaism. Not according to the Torah. You have to transform it, not destroy it. Finally, that holy spark that was in Lot, in the curse, in the dark side, that holy spark has to be revealed. It took many generations. Finally, when Ruth converts, how did she do that? There was a plague. Her husband died. Her brother-in-law died. Her father-in-law died. Naomi, her mother-in-law, became poor. She was one of the richest women in the area. And Naomi goes back from Moab to Bethlehem. And she says to Ruth, like, why are you following me? I have nothing to give you. I don't have money to give you. I don't have children to give you. And Ruth says, your people are my people. Your nation is my nation. Your God is my God. And Ruth, from a princess, she had everything. She chooses to join Ruth, to join Naomi, okay, and to join the Jewish people, to join the journey. And then she becomes the wife of Boaz, and then comes out King David. What does that mean? Everything in our lives that looks like a disaster, everything in the history of humanity that looks like only darkness, if it doesn't have light inside, it has no ability to survive, to live. It thrives. It sucks its energy from the light within. So you cannot eliminate a part of humanity. You cannot eliminate a part of your life. Why? Because if that part has a reality, it's because you did not learn how to transform yet and reveal the light within. When you reveal the light within, this is the taste of Mashiach. Mashiach does not mean, like many monotheistic people believe, you know, the idea of Mashiach is one day will come and somebody will come and save everybody. And with that goes the idea also, the false idea, the false Mashiach, that whoever does not believe in the Mashiach has to die and go to hell forever. Now, the whole idea of Mashiach, we learn from here, is that everything has to be transformed, everything. Every part of reality has to be transformed from dark to good, from a curse to a blessing. And if you didn't transform it yet, Mashiach is not there yet. The process, the messianic process, has not been completed yet. Mashiach means that nobody will be left behind. Again, the book of Samuel 2, chapter 14, verse 14. Ki lo yidach mimeno nidach. No one will be left behind. No one. A Jew, a non-Jew, an evil man, a righteous man, a smart man, a stupid man. No one. Men, women, doesn't matter. The moment you have a soul, that soul is destined for holiness. Okay? So you do not destroy stuff. You correct stuff. You correct situation. And the most important, you correct your consciousness. If you have a consciousness of hatred, which means we have to kill them and destroy them, we don't need them in order to be... How many times? Look what the communism did. Okay? Or the French Revolution. Let's kill the bad guys and everything will be heaven. So many people were murdered because of that idea. This is so not Mashiach idea. This is not monotheism. Monotheism sees everything as one. So the process is that we will start seeing even our enemies. They're part of us. I need to elevate the light in the system in order for them to transform. But destroying and killing my enemies and take them out of the equation won't solve the problem. Yes, somebody comes to kill you, the Torah says, you have to defend your life and kill him. Okay? But that's not a solution. That means, okay, the process will continue till you find your journey. Now, and the journey is that you learn to transform the evil into good. The birth of Sarah. That's too long, but it's like chapter 21, verse 1. Rosh Hashanah. What is Rosh Hashanah? The day of judgment. The light of God is coming, filling up every human being. But it's a test. What are you going to do with that light? If you can elevate and you can really reach to a place that everything is good and you're thankful for everything that happened because you know whatever happened is from God, and whatever happened is from God, it's for the good. When we reach that place, everything is good. Everything will turn out good and we'll see it as long as we have that disbelief in the goodness. And we still have anger, disbelief, doubt, negativity, fear. We still have to experience the klipa. which means moments of discomfort till we overcome and transform those moments. Okay? Only then the light within will be revealed, like the light that was within Lot has been revealed as King David. Okay? That's how we have to see everything that happens to us. The bigger the darkness, the bigger the pain, the bigger the light hiding behind it. That's the concept of correction. Correction and not cutting off. So here comes the idea of giving birth, Abram and Sarah giving birth to Yitzchak. What is Yitzchak? Laughter. What is laughter? You know, did you notice that a lot of very religious people, the moment they are into hating whoever is not like them, they lose the ability to laugh. They have no humor, sense of humor, and they can't laugh. It's all too serious. People cannot laugh. They cannot be good people. But laughter is the left column. Finally, Abram and Sarah that come from the right column, which in the beginning you think, you know, when you're just a beginner in spirituality, it's all love. We just have to love. We have to give. You cannot take anything for yourself. You have to be a hermit. You're not allowed to be rich. If you're rich, you probably stole from somebody. God forbid. Rich people must be sinners. But you have to grow up. And then they give birth to the idea of left column, Isaac. You can laugh, enjoy yourself, be rich, achieve, and still be spiritual. How? Then we go to the binding of Isaac. The binding of Isaac is when Abram is learning to bind Isaac, the left column, and to create the power of Jacob, the central column. When we go through that process of Abram binding Isaac, what's Abram binding Isaac? I allow myself to have passion for richness, for power, for wisdom, for any greatness, any goodness, anything of success, but I bind it with the idea that I cannot have success, any great success, any true success, without it's bound to what do I do for others with that? Because, and then comes an amazing Zohar about Parashat Vayera. And the Zohar says about, we're talking about Genesis chapter 22, verse 1. And it was after those events. Va'elohim nisa et Avraham, and God tested Abraham. Nisa is the regular translation. And the Zohar says, I'm reading now from the Zohar Asulam, verse 89, I'm sorry. Okay? Where it says, Va'yi achar advarim el, it was achar. Achar, the word achar, we'll see it again in the story, means the dark side. How do you say the dark side, the Kabbalistic language? Sitra achra, the other side. Other means the dark side, okay? So there was, what that means, it's immediately bringing us, there was dark side, there was the evil inclination in the story of Abraham binding Isaac. Where do you find it? The Zohar says, you have to look to ponder about it. Shekatuv, Va'elokim nisa et Avraham, and God tested Abraham. Et Yitzchak haya tzech lomar. Tested Isaac. It should be said, tested Isaac. Shere Yitzchak kvar haya ben 37 shana. Isaac, if you really read the text, Isaac was 37 years old. And Abram was 137 years old at the time of the binding. So what does that mean? Few things. One, Yitzchak enenu ben onchin alav. Shenet bifilo. V'imale amar Yitzchak eni rotze, lo haya aviv nenash alav. So we see from the story, Abram takes Isaac to the Temple Mount, Mount Moriah, to the stone, the foundation stone of the physical reality, what is called today the Holy of Holies, okay? Where is right now, according to most opinions, under the Golden Dome on the Temple Mount, which was built as a monument to the place, to that stone that the world was created from, that Abraham bound Isaac on, that Jacob had his dream with a ladder on it and so on, and that's a place that King David chose to build the temple, and King Solomon built the first temple, and later on the second temple were built on that stone, okay? And what does it say? Why is the test of Abraham? Isaac is 37, so 3 days they're walking there. They're coming to the place. There was a moment that Abraham had to tell Isaac, lie down, I'll tie you up, and I'll sacrifice you. And Isaac had to say, yes. He's a grown-up man. He's 37 years old. What if, says the Zohar, Isaac said to his father, Dad, I have no idea what you're doing. I'm going back home to mom. Would Abraham be punished because of that? No. Because what could he do? He's 137 years. He cannot force Isaac to do that. But the Zohar says, but the problem is Abraham heard the order, the command from God. Isaac didn't hear it from God. So if Isaac got up and left, Abraham cannot force him, so he's exempt. Isaac did not hear any order from God, he's also exempt. Everybody's clear, and there's no trauma, everything is okay. So the test, says the Zohar, should have been Isaac's test, not Abraham's test. Abraham had the message from God, he had 10 tests. He had pure faith in God, he knew he has to do it. But what can I do? Isaac left, I can't do it to him. So why does it say that God is testing Abraham? It was Isaac's test. Umeshiv and the answer is verse 490. Of course we have to say, Et Avraham shu haya tzach likalel bedin. The word is test, but another meaning for the word nisa, it's coming from the word nes, a miracle. Why do we go through tests? In Hebrew, the word is the same word. A test is an opportunity that we go through in which we can have a miracle. What's a miracle? Changing nature. That's a miracle. My nature was reactive to that moment. And from this moment on, I stepped up. I rose above the occasion, which was the other meaning of the word nes. Nes in Hebrew you have in Psalms, lanus velehitnoses, from Psalms, to flee up and to rise all above. That's nes. That's a miracle. A miracle is a situation in which you're being in bondage inside the box of pain and misery and victimization and hatred. You didn't figure the reality properly. You were being bound where? Inside the klipa, inside the shell. But then you transformed yourself. You lit yourself. You turned the darkness into light. The fear into faith. That's called a miracle. Okay? Abraham had a miracle. What's a miracle? Till that moment, Abraham was a chariot of chesed, loving kindness. He thought that that's the road. Loving kindness will do all of it. Even when he received the light of God, he exchanged immediately to loving kindness. He thought that's the only way. But as he went up to the mount and he bound Isaac, it was not just chesed. He had some judgment in the chesed. It's called, there's a tough love. Sometimes because you love your child, or you love your customer, and you say, yes, but no. This is as much as I can give. And without hatred, without negativity, you simply put the limits. Those limits, this is the essence of life. With a loving way, you put the limits. Abraham arrived to that place when he was 137 years old. when he had to bound Isaac, and he knew that that's the next level. That was his miracle. That chesed, that the right column, is not complete unless it is going and aligned with the left column, with judgment. So, you know, when people say, don't judge me, of course I should judge you. I cannot just out of love give you everything. This is not the case. This is not monotheism. When you really love someone, you give them what they need, not what they ask. Okay? You want to destroy your child, just give them whatever they want. Right? You know exactly what I'm saying. They'll become bipolar sometime. They'll have a terrible life. Psychologists are saying when you give your child everything they ask for, you deprive them. You give them the biggest deprivation, the deprivation of the need for hope. When you tell your child, you know what? You want this? First finish your food. Do your whatever. Do your homework. You have to work for it. You have to earn it. When they don't have what they want, and they know, they feel the lack, they feel the pain of the lack, but they know in the end they're going to get what they need, what they want. You train them to connect to one of the most important tools of a human being, hope. Okay? Hope in Hebrew is tikva. The shoresh of the word tikva is kav. Kav means a line. To have a line to the light when you're stuck deep in the darkness, that's the biggest gift an educator can give to the people they educate. It could be your children, could be your students, whatever. The vision. And that means that for that you need to bind, which means Abram is binding Isaac, he's creating in the universe that miraculous force that is called the central column, in which the right column is binding the left column, not destroying it, binding. That I don't have to destroy my desires. Oh, that's your ego because you want to do this and this. So, do I have to destroy my ego? No. I have to bind it. So I want to be a great provider of whatever. That's not ego. That's not a bad ego. If you do it, on one hand, you feel the need to achieve greatness and you're born for that. On the other hand, and that's what we're going back to Adam, you know that God created you to receive greatness. But the only condition is that you develop that greatness within you with the commitment to share and to give. That is the creation of the binding of Isaac. That's why we have to read that on Rosh Hashanah, because it's the healing of all our troubles. And that's how we turn darkness into light, bitterness into sweet, a trouble into a solution, a disaster into an opportunity. This is the formula. And that's when the stress test leads us into greatness. And it's all in this parasha. Thank you so much. And have a great week full of miracles.